Okay, it's 1 minute after the hour, so let's get started. We have our remote connections. We have Julie, we have Gordon Chilcott. We have anyone else? We have, well, I guess we'll find out at roll call.
Sherman.
Yeah, Gareth's on. And Alan's, oh, Alan's Goose is on, okay. Okay, so as I was saying over the last couple of meetings, that, or at least last meeting that we had, I wanted this meeting here. Yeah, we're going to do that, don't worry. We're going to be a little less structured in this meeting in the sense that normally we stick to a very fixed agenda, but I wanted this meeting to be about what's going on here in Dakar so that the people who are joining us remotely can feel like they have a connection to what's happening and can ask us in real time questions they may have about various goings-on and such so that they can be answered here while they're happening. So first let's do a roll call, and then after that we'll go around the room, and there's some unfamiliar couple unfamiliar faces here to me, so I'd like to kind of find out who's in the room. Could we go through the roll call, please? Yeah.
We have Bo Brendler, Darlene Thompson, Evan Leibovich, Samantha Eisner from staff, Charles Mock,
Glenn Riker,
Garth Bruin, Ganesh Kumar, Eduardo Diaz, Devnan Tilaksing, Carlton Samuels, and myself, Matt Ashiani, from staff.
Okay, and can we go around to the room here and ask who? My guess is I think that person's just using the internet here, which is fine. I don't think she's participating. Can we ask who our guest you are? You just want to use the internet. No problem. We'd give you coffee, but they ran out, I think, out there. Yeah, we encourage internet use whenever possible, I think. Can you... Oh, okay, and...
Oscar Ayala from the PRCC TLD.
Can I ask you to speak into the microphone so our remote participants can hear you?
Oscar Ayala from the DAR PRCCTOD.
And my name is Karina Cortez, also from the DOT PRCCTOD.
And for the record. Oh, okay. All right. That's fine. All right. Don't worry about it then. So in terms of policy issues, let's try to do something a little less formulated and live. We have Evan Leibovich, our esteemed elected ALEC representative. We also now have the presence of Olivier Crepin-Leblanc, who is the chairman. Would you like to just give us a little jazzy and snappy policy update live from the venue? You said jazz. Oh, good. That's my... Oh, I like that. That's more techno, I think.
Okay, hello everybody. This is Evan Leibovich. A good chunk of what this week is to at large is seeing a couple of things happen. For instance, we're finding out more about what is available to us in terms of we're getting a bit more comfortable with the ICANN new personnel involved in finance, just feeling our way through about where things stand for us. But the big issue for us this week has been about the Joint Applicant Support Working Group that is trying to bring support for TLD applications from developing countries. This has been the end result of an awful lot of work by an awful lot of people from Naralo and elsewhere in at large, together with members of the GNSO and together with support from the Government Advisory Committee in what I believe to be an unprecedented amount of joint community support on this. This morning there was a session held even before the welcoming ceremony that was attended by myself and a number of people here that was giving a workshop on the jazz progress. It was attended very well by members of the community and especially members of the board because it's our hope that the board is going to take a vote on applicant support. There's a very specific report come out from this committee with very specific recommendations, including the lowering of the ICANN entry fee for GTLDs from $185,000 to $47,000 for qualified applicants. The intention, though, is to have the bar set relatively high so that there has to be proof of social benefit, proof of financial need, and a number of other criteria that have to be met before that can be levied, before an applicant can be qualified for this kind of support. But the community has been very strong about trying to extend that. So part of what we've been trying to do this week is to make sure that the community, the ICANN board, and anyone else coming understands the community support of this concept. It's been important to at large ever since the summit in Mexico City. So we hope to see it through this week. Another thing that I'll put in a personal plug for is something called the Future Challenges Working Group, which is going to kick off this week. And it's our intention to try and, through this working group, basically take at large and ATLAC into the next level of maturity in going from simply reacting to policy, public comment periods and things like that, and always running after the agendas of other constituencies and starting to set the agenda for ourselves. I invite anybody who's in Dakar to come to our meeting on Thursday. I hope to see you there. Those are the two main things. Of course, we have meetings with the board. We have meetings with the non-commercial stakeholders group. We have meetings with the Government Advisory Committee, with which we're having an increasingly improving relationship, as well as trying to make contacts throughout the community and essentially further solidify in the maturing of at large and its role within ICANN's political structure. Does anybody have any questions? Is Olivier still here?
I don't think so.
Olivier, did you want to add anything to that?
No, thank you, Evan. That's fine. You've done a very good job.
Do we have any questions from remote participants on that? I can't see them from here, so somebody will have to tell me. Looks like Julie has one. Are there any remote? Oh, there are no questions. Okay.
No.
Next, in terms of action items, one of the major action items from our last meeting was what we just did in the previous hour, which was to talk about the NARALO survey. I won't go back through that again because I think just about everybody who was in that meeting is still in this meeting. And you can certainly ask me if you have any questions. So that action item has been moved on. Does Julie or Alan or Glenn, do you want to give us any comment or any updates on the video project? Is Julie on the phone? Or is he just on chat? His sound is not working. Okay. And Glenn McKnight is not on, is that right? No. Okay. I I can't really give an update on the video project because I'm not aware of where that is beyond what we've already discussed. So we'll move past that. And that kind of combines what we've been talking about in terms of priorities for the coming months. Anybody have any other questions before I move ahead? Okay. Oh, question.
Jolie just commented online that people should be ready to be interviewed by Glenn when he does get here. And I think Glenn has Wednesday set up for doing interviews for the video project.
Thank you. That's helpful. Yeah, he was also he also had hoped to be here for the survey discussion as well, but since he's with the NomCom, those folks don't arrive until later in the week. Okay, so let's move on then to other stuff. Now, I'm not exactly sure how to proceed with this item because the developments there have been some developments. Let me ask the ALEC chair, Olivier, which would be more appropriate for me to characterize the? We're basically on the very last item on the agenda. A, would it be more appropriate for me to characterize what was discussed this morning, or would it be more appropriate for you to characterize it as you perceive, or should we just go chronologically from how this developed to be an agenda item for us? What do you think is more appropriate, or perhaps there's another option?
Thank you very much, Bo. Olivier Crépin-Oblo for the transcript record. I think that it's really up to you as to which way you wish to go forward as chair of Naralo. I'm not quite sure whether you need to go into details. It really is a case of let me see, how do I phrase this? A tricky issue with regards to a registry transfer policy that does happen, and there are processes currently in ICANN that deal with this sort of work, specifically in the CCNSO. And so I think that discussing transfer policies as such, and perhaps discussing possible input via our CCNSO liaison is something that you might wish to discuss at Naralo level, and then passing it over to the ALAC to pass on over to the CCNSO liaison, who is actually also on the framework of interpretation working group.
Okay.
That deals specifically with these sorts of items.
Okay, well, let me ask this then. Since a couple of other folks did the heavy lifting on the researching of the draft statement on .pr, but I am the one who's responsible for headlining it and writing it and distributing it and asking the ICANN staff to put a session on the agenda to discuss it, which got overridden by the president of Senegal. It's come to my attention, actually, that we have some people here from .pr. I'm wondering if it would be agreeable to perhaps open a dialogue and see if there's a way that we can engage in a discussion that perhaps gave a side of their story that's not currently represented in the ongoing lawsuit. Is that something that can be done without causing a lot of legal problems? I mean, I don't necessarily know that there would be any legal problems because I don't think anybody can validly sue in a Rallo. Doesn't have an MOU with ICANN. So do we want to do that? It might be profitable or good for open communication. Yes.
Thank you, Bo. Olivier Crépin-Oblo for the record. I think you can ask the question. If it is the wish for this specific subject to be discussed, you can definitely discuss things. But I would say that presenting the statement for a vote or for anything to do with actually pushing the statement through one way or other through an Aralo is your own choice. What I would say, though, is that from the information that I do get, I think that this statement is not very balanced. And I would say that as far as ALAC is concerned, because there is a working group that is in place in the CCNSO treating transfer of of details from one registry to another, there's nothing that the ALAC would push forward at all, just to make it clear.
Yes, I was not suggesting that we do anything with that statement, but I was just wondering if perhaps for the benefit of better, as you say, balance, if Karina or Oscar might like to speak to the issue, if that's appropriate. Did you want to speak?
We have a prepared statement, if you wish. We will not discuss the details of the case because we think it's inappropriate to discuss at this moment. At this moment, we do not believe it is appropriate to discuss the details of the case, since it's not Oscar, it's Karina, and
we figured that out, but it's just because we have a transcript that people will like read, so we just. It's a pain. I always forget myself. So,
and especially we strongly believe that since what is being discussed has been taken from the allegations that the University of Puerto Rico has made, we believe we are not at a stage where a discussion should be made because they are only allegations. So maybe when the case comes to a result, then maybe we have a better discussion about it. That's all we have to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, in the United States, actually, allegations made in a court are appropriate to discuss. We're no longer under the British legal system, so they can be discussed as long as certain standards are met. Did you have something you wanted to add? I saw you sort of waving Olivier rather concernedly. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Beau. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript. I think I see a lot of bewildered faces around of people who don't really know what the deal is. I will make a quick a summary of what's going on. Basically, you've put a statement, a proposed statement, a draft statement on the Neuralo wiki pages, which has, and I'm not sure whether we have that proposed statement or draft statement somewhere, which appears to be showing a one-sided view of a court case, I believe, and I guess this what I've heard here. And so there's a court case in place, and effectively, I'm not quite sure whether it is appropriate to discuss a court case the way that it is actually presented this way, especially since other party, the other viewpoint, is not willing to go and discuss the case in any specific matter. That said, it is not for the ALAC to tell Neuralo what to do. So it's in your hands. I'm not quite sure whether any of my vice chairs would like to add something, but
Cheryl Langdon, over the transcript record, other than my absolute support for everything you've said. No, thank you, Olivier.
This is Evan for the record. What I'm hoping to do with this is to see on an ongoing basis if there's some lessons learned on a more general basis. There's the FOI committee that's going on that's trying to implement something better going forward if there's loopholes, closing loopholes, if there's issues, deal with the issues. One of the things that we can find out is to generalize this so this is not based on any one particular CC, to find out things that we've identified with all sorts of issues coming forward, and to perhaps put that forward into advice that can be given to the FOI effort and elsewhere into ICANN as necessary to try and take what we've found from this, learn from it, move forward, and perhaps give something in the public interest into ICANN in exactly the manner that ALAC is mandated in the bylaws to do.
Thank you. Eduardo?
Eduardo, for the record, I tend to agree with Evan that the FOI should look at this, especially on the UPR allegation that Ayana was involved in this. So if, you know, I think we should refer that to FOI and just make sure they, you know, as part of all the cases, they, on the framework for interpretation, they, you know, look at it from the general point of view.
Thank you. Oh, Olivier, in response.
Thank you, Bo. Actually, Cheryl, I put my hand just before you, but I was going to actually send the floor over to you, or suggest for the floor to be sent over to you, because I think many people don't know what the FOI is. So perhaps, since we happen to have the CCNSO liaison here, maybe she could explain what the FOI is.
Actually, before she starts, what I would like to say is I didn't learn what the FOI was until this morning myself. So all of the to-ing and fro-ing and all of that needs to proceed in light of the fact that proper communication about everything we're talking about is not happening at the regional level. Now you can talk.
And it is my pleasure. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record, and the Naralo lists will show me sending the complete information, including the link to the current framework of interpretation workgroup page, when the discussion began on the Naralo list. So please look to your regional communications and find those archives. The moment this topic came up, I pointed all of you to the CCNSO workgroup page. Since then, however, and I will now put my happy smiley face on, we happen to have the first interim report of the Framework of Interpretation workgroup out for public comment. Therefore, this is an ideal time for you, jointly or severally, as regional group, as ALSs or as individuals, to comment on what is in the work we have done so far, and let me share with you what that is so far. It is an extremely complex and very, very challenging issue to ascertain what is believed to be a word and understanding of what a meaning is and what happens when you look at precedents. So we have sat at this stage and gone through all the uses of terms. Our comparison is to certain standards such as the GAC advice from 2005, and we are proposing in this particular workgroup report a set of currently agreed, under discussion, interpretations of words and terminologies. Because without those being clear, the rest cannot follow. It is the first step on quite a long journey, but it is a journey which has the CCNSO community and the Government Advisory Committee within ICANN in lockstep with each other. And that means that two groups that have absolute vested interest, significantly interest parties under any jurisdictional identification, anybody would think these were the significant interested parties, will have at least agreed on what we mean by terminology. So that is a good place for you to start looking at systemic, if you believe there has been any such systemic issue. It's very difficult to undo time. John Postel, thank you, my dear man, however, has created us a whole lot of issues in country, out of current country, who's in control of what territory. Australia has Heard Islands, which the local internet community is literally penguins. No humans actually exist on the place. I mean, it's an absolute cornucopia of issues to be dealt with. But they are being dealt with. It is being recognised. And there is an appropriate pathway right now where you can have influence on future-proofing what is going on. And at that, I'll be happy to open any questions, and I will log in and put the link to the FOI workgroup in your Adobe page so you have it for the record. And I'll certainly be happy to resend my original message to the list. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First hand I saw was Darlene, unless there's any remote. Go ahead.
My question is for Cheryl. Perhaps I'm particularly dense, but I have no idea what a bunch of interpretations of terms has to do with exactly what we're talking about on the .pr situation. I'm just not seeing the tie-in.
Carlton, go ahead.
Thank you, Carlton Summers, for the record. Just to say that I started following the issue when it first came out in the Narala. Listen, I just pulled it up here, and I saw the back and forth. It is true that Cheryl did send a note to the list that laid out what the discussions were in the CCNSO working group on the framework for interpretation. The issue is this. There is a, and just to back into it, I happen to have some interest in this, having been involved in several redelegations in the Caribbean, .gy and Grenada. I worked extensively with those. There is a question that the terms that are used in the communications between the requester and those who fulfill the requests may, in fact, be misleading to people who were not involved in the conversation. And so, therefore, they thought that what they should do was to harmonize, to interpret, and to not just contextualize, but certainly to get a list of terms that everyone could agree when they see them mean the same thing, dealing with the redelegation issue. And so the working group, it is enough of a problem, tell the truth, that the working group was established, and one of the first things that was required was to look at the terms that are used in the communication between requestor and those fulfilling the request, the IANA side and those. And sometimes redelegation involves third parties because sometimes they are held in trust. And so the idea was, and I think it's actually where you have to start, is to everyone agreeing on terms that are used and what they mean, and that is the first set, and that is absolutely, I support that. That makes sense to me. With regard to the rationale for the focus on Cheryl, as I read it when she posted it as a list, was that if you look at the complaint, because I read through the complaint, the pleading, that is, in the federal court, federal district court, and you look at what is alleged, and then you look at the terminologies that are used in the redelegation exercise, then there is some, the interpretation could be benign, could be considered benign, and that, I believe, was the issue she was pointing to as I read it. It was a cautionary note to say, look at these this stuff here in the framework for interpretation, because if you look at what has transpired in the use of these terms, you might see that it doesn't rise to the level that has been alleged. That was what I think the note was intended to drive, and I saw it. Thank you.
Carlton, if I can now directly respond to Darlene. I may have not been clear enough by saying that this is terminology related to delegation and re-delegation. That is what I missed out saying. And therefore, with that added on to Carlton, I think that should be clear. Is that all right, Darlene?
That made it much clearer, right, and I'm sure I wasn't the only one listening that had no idea why a set of definitions, then we had no idea what they were about, what really had to do with this thing.
Thanks. So let me propose this then. We have 28 minutes. You know, I'm all for forward progress through appropriate channels. So let's just take the elephant out of the room and pretend that the NARALO, pretend for the moment that the NARALO never put together a draft statement or anything like that. If we can just pretend that and step back from the CCNS or step back from the issue in that way. Many other circumstances have occurred in which issues of concern related to CCTLDs have come up. And part of the discussion that was supposed to have taken place today was kind of a two-part discussion. The first part was supposed to be about getting a more complete picture of the issue in Puerto Rico. And the second part was supposed to be about discussing some issues related to CCTLDs. And I'm hoping perhaps that Garth Bruin, who's sitting at the end of the table there, just sort of for the sake of our edification, might like to give us some bits and pieces, some highlights from the presentation that he had originally prepared for today. But perhaps we could just sort of bracket out the things that we feel are less appropriate to discuss at the moment.
Thank you, Bo. I've done some, I guess, significant research into the world of CCTLDs. I issued a report a couple of years ago that I think you cited either in Sydney or Seoul that got some visceral reaction. I looked up some what I thought would be pertinent cases. The first one that I came across was for .MP, which is the Northern Mariana Islands, which are a U.S. territory. They have a non-voting representative in the U.S. Congress, and their CCTLD is completely in the hands of a private company. It's not a nonprofit, and it's not a university. And there is a significant amount of cyber squatting going on there. And nobody there answers the phone or responds to emails. So when we have a situation like that, the way that some of these are assigned, and of course some of these were assigned, you know, a million years ago by Postel, and undoing it can be difficult. But this is an example that is of concern. And also bouncing around are some of the tiny depopulated or unpopulated islands. Cheryl had mentioned the Heard and McDonald Islands. There's also Bouvet Island, which is in the South Atlantic. And then there's Ascension Island, which is a volcano. And I think that there are actually a few more. There are some CCTLDs that do not, they don't have any assignment, anybody running them. They do sort of hover in the registry. I don't know if there are any plans to activate those. There are CCTLDs like .SU, which is for Soviet Union, which, for as most people are aware, the country no longer exists, but it is still active, and it's unclear why. There are comparable cases in .YU, which was for Yugoslavia, and when that country split, each region, each new country got their own CCTLD, and .YU was retired. And then, of course, we have East Germany, which was DM, and that was retired when Germany was reunified. Should I go on?
Well, Evan wanted to make a comment, but I also wanted to just ask a quick question, sure, sort of from a consumer perspective. And mm-hmm. since it seems to be of great difficulty for this community to define the term consumer, it's been at least 5 years running now. I'm talking about issues of related to fraud or abuse or whatever. In your opinion, do some of these, I don't want to use the term questionable, but do some of these potentially questionable islands with addresses present a risk for abuse? I mean, don't have to answer that now, but I'm just curious about it. And Evan, you wanted to ask a question?
Not so much a question, but a suggestion. Garth, you've collected a lot of data over the years. Essentially, we could go over the, you know, hundreds and hundreds of two-letter combinations that have been assigned to various countries, territories, and other political entities, and literally make out a chart that says for each of them, who are they nominally supposed to be for, who's operating them, who's the service provider that's operating them. You have situations, and this is not necessarily directly Norello, but you have a lot of American and Canadian companies that are maybe buying in .co without even knowing that it's not a generic, that it's actually designated to the country of Colombia. But if you go to the .co page, you really have to drill down to even find that out. There's similar country code domains that are being used, like generics in .tv, .nu, .fm are the most obvious. I believe .md I just heard has also been allocated in that path. So I think we could actually be doing a significant public service by, without analysis, actually just trying to drill down and putting out a factual table, if it doesn't already exist, sorted by CCTLD. What is the code? What is the jurisdiction? Who is the registry operating it? And who is the provider operating it? If that doesn't already exist somewhere in the public record, it ought to.
Should I respond or wait for questions?
Go ahead briefly, Carlton. I was just going to tell Garth to, you know, resume as he wished. Go ahead. Olivier has his hand up. Okay, Carlton I heard first, then Olivier, and then Garth can go back to his summary.
Thank you, Chair. Just say that following up on Evan's comment, that information available, but it's not discreetly in laid out in the way you have relayed it. For example, there is no who owns the registry for that. There's no information on that collected anywhere. So I'm suggesting that this is a good way for you to back into the issue by providing that kind of data.
Thank you, Carlton. Olivier, then Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Chair. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript record. That information is very readily available. It's on the IANA website. It is the database of, what is it called? You go onto www.iana.org, and you go into database of top-level domains. And for each top-level domain that is there, if you click on it, it will actually give you the country code, and it will. When you click on that, you've got sponsoring organization, administrative contact, technical contact, and the name servers as well. That's been like that for ever since I've remembered it. Before that, nick.ddn.mil was running that. That's the late 80s. With regards to those, what I used to call courtesy top-level domains, because they were not used specifically for they used ISO 3166 country codes, which are actually misnamed because they're not country, but they're country and territory codes. Those ones have actually been used for as long as I remember as well. The first one, raising my eyebrow, having been .tv, for obvious reasons, TV being Tuvalu. However, while some of these top-level domains had been, or country top-level domains had been used by people that had absolutely nothing to do with the territory itself, and that, I guess, has to do with Postel's allocation of these and the fact that he was a one-man band, thus not having very much time having to go and check if the person or the applicant really lived on that place, and thus not knowing that Bouvet Island was only populated by penguins, historically there has been some frowning from some parts of the internet internet community, saying, "Oh well, these should be not allowed." While others have said, actually, some good opportunities have come out. If I recall correctly, and I may be wrong because I'm doing all of this from memory, but .tv Tuvalu was actually at some point, and perhaps still now, being marketed worldwide as though it was a GTLD. But the proceeds of that actually went to fund local networking for the local population over there, who apparently, because it is an island and it's far from everywhere, had problems in connecting to the outside world because you required satellite connection, etc., etc. So sometimes the use of these CCTLDs outside the actual territory that they denominate have actually helped the local population. Now, whether it's a case for all of them or some of them, that is up to each CCTLD. I haven't followed this with time because it's pretty hard. There's quite a few of them out there. And perhaps I'm not sure if the FOI is having any issue with this or has followed up. I don't even know whether new rules have now been added. I believe, and this is again just speculation, I believe, because I have not seen anything to that effect, that this hasn't been addressed. And I also suspect, and now I'm saying suspect because this is just, just me saying it, I don't think that there's been any real push by the CCTLD community to open that can of worms, because it is a can of worms. It's just got so many different aspects to it. Maybe they haven't had the time to do it. Maybe they don't wish to do it. What I do know is that some countries have been upset sometimes by the ISO 3166 list. For example, some French département like Martinique, having .mp, if I recall correctly, are actually seen as by France as being part of France. That said, France has therefore used .fr in Martinique and has tried to shy away from .mp until recently, when there was a lot of political discussion as to whether Martinique should also be able to use .mp. I don't know the status, the current status, but it might well be that some websites also have or some domains are under .mp. There are also weird allocations in ISO 3166, .fx, French Overseas Territories, and nobody knows what those are, because those usually would be this. But then .fx might actually mean any piece of rock that is technically part of France. That might be something like a 1 square meter piece of rock in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and that doesn't even need anything else. It's none of the above type thing. But, these things happen, and I'm not quite sure whether, maybe the CCTLD community has felt that they wouldn't waste any time on these things and just leave those little kinks in the system as time goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier. Just to briefly respond to part of what you said with a sort of consumer communication advocacy hat on. I think it's fine to say that such and such type of information is available on a website, but the consumer, even human being name recognition of what IANA is, let alone how to navigate its website or to find pertinent data on its pages, is quite a stretch. I mean, it took me 6 months of being part of ICANN before I even knew what IANA was or how the IANA contract related to ICANN, blah, blah, blah. So I won't bore people with my long learning curve, but, we need to be aware of that. So I think Cheryl was next.
Thank you very much, Cheryl Langdonor, for the transcript record. I would actually like, if I could, to say that Olivier I don't know what you're tapping into down there, but stop taking the words right out of my mouth, excepting for the French examples. Thank you very much for doing what I wanted to say. I also wanted to point out that, of course, there are particular additions to the currently proposed IANA contract that would be renegotiated with whomever wins it. We assume ICANN, and all that does is make the public accessibility of some of the records even easier. But at that, Bo, we do have someone from IANA here at the table. Perhaps a moment for a right of reply would be appropriate.
That would be wonderful. Before we do that, though, there is just one thing. I see a rather long chain of items in the chat, and I think we may have lost our... external. Oh, it's a chat. Someone's spamming it. Okay, so we're not behind on our obligation to.
I've been watching it.
You have. Okay, very good. Well, since we've kind of hijacked Garth's discussion of his presentation, Garth, do you wish to just take a minute or two to hear from IANA?
Oh, absolutely. I do want to respond to you, to Evan, and to Olivier.
Excellent. Go ahead then. Could you just introduce yourself and tell us your name?
En français ou en anglais?
En français, s'il vous plaît.
Bien, je m'appelle Elise Garrick et je peux parler français.
We don't have an interpretation.
Oh, wait, our interpreters. Our interpreters left. Well, come on.
Actually, it's.
This region is all Canadian anyway. Aren't you all bilingual?
So, since no one speaks French,
I'm the only American guy here. That's off the record.
No.
Actually, I had the red light on, so.
Please do not get the translators.
My apologies.
I can't speak more than three sentences in a row.
Go right ahead.
In English, I will go ahead. Well, this was kind of a little amusement. All right. So if you could maybe summarize your questions. Oh, I'm sorry. I said it. Oh, I did. In French. It's the same in English. Elise Garrick. And I am the Vice President, IANA, at ICANN. And if you could maybe summarize what your questions were, or if you want me to just dive in and make something up, I'd be happy to.
It's the accessibility of information database. The drill down to even find out what you got on there was one of the complaints.
Okay, so the complaint is about the information on the IANA webpage then, I take it.
So?
Yes?
Well, I mean, that's one thing, but I mean, just sort of a larger issue in a sense is that I think it's very difficult for people to understand what the, and when I say people, I mean like human beings who are supposed to try to, all terms must be defined in this universe. It's not consumer, it's people. I think people want to know what IANA is and what its relationship to ICANN is. So I'm not asking you to defend the way your website is architected, but I'm just
sort
of saying, can we try to... Is there a possibility at some point where there could be a handout like in these bags that come out, or just something to sort of raise the profile a little bit? Because
I'd be happy to give you a short synopsis, and I will preface it by saying that I did give an at-large presentation at about what IANA did, I think two ICANN meetings ago, and I spoke just this afternoon to Afralo about the current status of ICANN and IANA. So let me just start from the scratch. So ICANN is a corporation that has the contract with the Department of Commerce. NTIA is the department within the Department of Commerce, U.S. government. And that contract asks ICANN, or grants ICANN, the ability to manage and run the IANA functions. The IANA functions have three primary components. One of those components are protocol parameters. Those are primarily registries and information that people who build software and computers use to build interoperable equipment and software on the network. So some of the protocols that they define include IPv4 addressing, IPv6 addressing, DNS, the domain name system, DNSSEC, the security for the domain name system, BGP, which is a border gateway protocol for routers, OSPF, which is a protocol for routers. So those are just examples. So that's what the protocol parameters are all about. And basically, ICANN and IANA have had a memorandum of understanding with the IATF. This is independent of the contract that we have with Department of Commerce to take care of all these registries, and that memorandum of understanding has been in place since 2004. And we have SLAs, service level agreements, with the IATF on how we manage the registries that we do for the protocol parameters. So that's one of the activities that's defined as an IANA function. The second activity under the IANA function that's under the Department of Commerce contract with ICANN, yes?
Oh, yeah, no, I don't mean to interrupt. No, it's just we're
is that too much detail?
Yeah, we have that level of knowledge.
Okay.
Let me just say, let me in a sense just say,
help me hone in.
Garth, what would you like to know about IANA?
Thank you. This is Garth Bruin again. I can answer that question by responding to a point from Olivier earlier. I have attempted to verify some of the information that is listed in IANA's database, and on some occasions, that information could not be verified. For certain CCTLDs, telephone numbers go to voicemails that are consistently full. In some cases, WHOIS servers are advertised in IANA's database, but in fact, the CCTLD has a stated policy of having no WHOIS on their own homepage. So I guess my question is, how do we go about reporting what may be inaccurate information?
So you can always send email to IANA at iana.icann.org or iana@iana.org. If it's your own TLD or someone you know, they can send in a request to update the information. And that's, we collect information and we publish it. We don't make it up. So therefore, if a CCTLD, any CCTLD, it could be .us, were to send us a sponsoring organization and an address for that sponsoring organization, and the sponsoring organization should somehow move within 6 months or whatever of when we received that information and posted it, the information would remain until the sponsoring organization, who manages the TLD and manages the information, sends us an update.
So in response to that, is there a process for proactively updating, recontacting the administrators?
You're going to laugh at our process, but I'll tell you what we do. So we send out holiday cards, and we send them out to the addresses that we have in the database. And then the ones that don't respond, we contact them.
How do you discern what the proper holiday is?
We figure that everybody has some sort of new year, so we send out a holiday card around the turning of the year.
Brilliant.
Let me just cut in for a second here. We have about 7 minutes left. We can continue this. ICANN staff has to leave to get to a policy dinner at 8 o'clock. We can continue without them. No, don't worry about that. I mean, it's not. And then internet will be shut off in here as of 8:30. So, but we can continue. So, I will. You know, I advocate for going as long as people want to stay with it. So,
but I Olivia, will offer to you know, if Olivier would like to, you know, sign me up to come and talk sometime at, give some sort of presentation, if you'd like to point me in a direction, I'm sure I could come and be happy to bring a presentation or just talk ad lib.
Thank you very much. I saw Olivia, then I saw Cheryl, and I'm going to go back to Garth and let him continue. Go ahead, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Chair. Olivier for the transcript records. I do have a question for Elise, actually. In the GNSO and with GTLDs, there is a requirement for accurate WHOIS records, and I understand that this is quite a strong requirement.
And I know that there's also who is review team and so on. There's all sorts of reviews going on to see which way, whether thick who is, thin who is, et cetera, et cetera. Garth earlier mentioned the lack of who is in some CCTLDs. And I just wondered whether there were any requirements for who is or whether there were any requirements for accurate contact details and whether these were enforced in any way or not enforced or what is the status of that? Thank you.
So I think since the CCTLDs predate ICANN or IANA, there's a lot of things that are legacy. And a lot of things are done with CCTLDs that are different than anything that's happened since the creation of ICANN, where they enter into formal contracts with newer TLDs. And so I'm not exactly sure that there's a mandate to have who is data up there. There is a requirement that you provide verifiable data when you register as the sponsoring organization and the administrative contact and the technical contact. But as you've heard, there's not a very good, formal agreement on how to keep that accurate after the first requirement, which is it has to be accurate when you register it. And we do check that at that point in time.
Did you want to?
It's Cheryl Langdon for the transcript record, and it's not a substantive comment. It was a suggestion that as we frequently change people in the regions and more ALSs join us, perhaps if we got a lease to do a small recorded webinar or similar podcast, certainly we could do for radio for our more remote areas that use radio. I think we might match you up with Scott and get you multimediaed in whatever is appropriate.
Thank you. I just, Evan, wanted to add something before we come back to Garth.
Actually, I wanted to sort of come full circle from what I'd said before about is there something we can do to provide a public service related to the listing of CCTLDs? I've looked at the IANA page. It gives a little bit of the data, but certainly not enough. I think, to allow a lot of end users to know what's going on. So, for instance, if it turns out that some of these registries have a who is and some don't, that's a column in the database that we should be indicating to people if they're looking at a CC. Does that CC have a who is? Where is the registry service provider located? If somebody thinks that they are using a registry, a CCTLD, to do something offshore, when in actual fact the service provider is located not offshore, perhaps this is something that somebody ought to know when they're making an informed choice. So as we continue to drill down into this whole thing about educated choices, competition, and so on, an informed registrant is a better registrant. The IANA database is a good start, but I don't think, when I look at it, that it's anywhere near the level of completeness that allows us to provide information that I think people need. And this perhaps is something we could, either in Naralo or perhaps getting other regions involved, might find this as a useful service to the public.
Thank you. I think that was particularly well said. Let's. Do you want to quickly say something before Garth?
This is Eduardo Diaz for the record. Elise, I have a question, and is it... are the CCTLDs required to have escrow their data just like GTLDs, or this is, what's the policy there?
I'll defer to an ICANN lawyer, but I don't believe there's any formal agreement where they have to do those things. But I'm uninformed, so I'll let the lawyers answer.
This is Samantha Eisner, senior counsel with ICANN. One thing... One difference between the GTLDs and the CCTLDs, as Carlton is saying, is that CCTLDs can voluntarily take on some of these items. We do not have the same type of registry agreement that is required of any GTLD and will be required for all new GTLDs that come in. If you look on the ICANN website, you can find a page that it's accessible from the quick links up at the top, and it's called, excuse me for 1 second, Country Code Top Level Domain Agreements. And if you click on that page, you will find that there are over 60 countries that have voluntarily entered into one of three types of agreements with ICANN. One is an exchange of letters, which is a recognition between ICANN and the sponsoring organization of undertaking commitments to notify ICANN within 7 days of a change of address or other contact information, a commitment from ICANN to make those changes on a timely basis, a commitment to treat the sponsoring organization fairly. You'll also find in there some financial commitments to ICANN for the services that ICANN provides. We also have the accountability framework, which is much more akin to a contract. And then we do have some older TLDs or some more established TLDs in terms of their operations, such as the .au, that actually have a formal agreement with ICANN. And I believe that it would only be through those types of formal agreements that we would have a firm commitment of data escrow.
Sure.
Within the IDN CCTLD program, we had the applicants must sign a terms and conditions paper that sets out some additional terms and conditions, including a commitment against wildcarding and commitments to implement, I believe a commitment to implement DNSSEC. And so we've tried to add some heightened technical requirements that would then carry into any documentation of that relationship. But that we do have two different worlds of the types of documentation between the two.
Thank you. Does that clarify? Okay. Garth, do you want to take us on home?
I will be as brief as possible. I already addressed Olivier's issue earlier. There was one correction. Martinique is .mq. Just want to make sure that was correct for the record. You were saying MP.
Yes, MP.
Yeah. Yeah. You were saying Martinique.
Yes.
That's .mq. It's okay. I have to look at a list. As far as Evan's question from earlier, there is a serious concern about domain consumer disclosure. If someone is buying a .md domain or some of the other CCTLDs and imagining that it is a GTLD, there isn't a lot of disclosure that they have an agreement with a foreign government. And if that particular foreign government ultimately decides that having an open registry for non-citizens is inappropriate, they may lose their domain name. And that's a very serious concern. And then as far as Bo's question from earlier, I think that it's not just a small island. I think that there is a potential for any CCTLD to be hijacked by some outside party that does not have the concern of the people, you know, in mind. And that's really why I cite these examples, because I think that we as a community have to question whether or not the concerns of the citizens of that country are being taken into consideration.
I see hands up. I mean, we keep interrupting you over and over again. Are you done?
I'm gonna release.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
This is Sam. Just for the record, not every CCTLD is managed by a government. It can be managed by a private party. It can be managed by a ministry within the government. There's no set form for how a CCTLD is sponsored. And so we can't always assume if we see a CCTLD that it is under the direction of a foreign government.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, you'll probably make the same point. I mean, that's I understand that. I believe that's a good legal explanation, but I'm not necessarily sure when from a consumer perspective you often hear it argued that, you know, no one can touch the CCTLD universe, that's all the sovereign property of nations and ICANN, and no one is to interfere in the sovereign, you know, properties of and all of that. I'm glad to actually hear Sam's clarification, because that now seems to me to be a specious argument. Go ahead, Garth.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I mean, it's very evident for some of them that it is a private party that sets the policy and has complete control over it. And especially when they're actually not in the country of origin, and many of them are in the United States, they're being administered from the United States, I do wonder whether there is, where is the sovereignty and where is the interest of the people of the original nation?
So there's an RFC. I'm sorry. Did you call on me?
Olivier, do you want to defer? Yeah.
Lady says.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was just jumping right in. So there's an RFC 1591, which defines the use of the ISO 3166 code to define what could be a CCTLD. And that also has a set of requirements that we've followed ever since that RFC was posted, and ICANN has always followed it. And one of the mandatory requirements is that the manager or the sponsoring organization is in country. So it doesn't say that the operator has to be in country, and it doesn't say that, you know, the technical people have to be in country. That's desirable, clearly, but the RFC just says the sponsoring organization, and they don't use that word, they use the manager word. So it defines what two-letter codes are eligible and which countries are eligible to have those two-letter codes, and that's based on the ISO 3166 standard. And then it does say the manager must be in country. So if you look, all of the sponsoring organizations should be in country. It may have different technical addresses for admin or technical people, but that's a nice to have per the RFC, not mandatory. And unless there's something else that changes, those are the guiding rules and principles. Right now, the CCNSO, and I'm assuming you all are aware of this, have what they're calling it, a framework of interpretation working group in place. And that's where they're trying to now clarify some of the interpretations that have been in practice for many, many years. We come full circle.
We've come full circle, but there's still hands up. I think I saw. Go ahead.
And the full circle, basically, the more I hear, the more I see that there's a confusion issue going on, that there's so many different ways of permutations. There's so many different things. Something you may think is a country isn't necessarily a country. There's a potential for an awful lot of confusion here. So I think we have a rule, perhaps, simply on an informational basis to at least make sure that people are informed about what's going on in the TLD that they're considering. The IANA database gives some of it, but not all of it. And the more I'm hearing, the more me coming in from the outside sees this this tangle of things that's so easily obfuscated. And I think we have a role here to help people get through that tangle.
Well said. Garth, do you...
Just in reference to the RFC that was referenced, is SU still on the ISO list that is referred to in the RFC?
SU's on the maintenance list. And so there's ISO 3166-1, and then they have a maintenance list also. And they move things to maintenance lists when countries are no longer countries, like Yugoslavia is also on the maintenance list. And, in fact... .an, the Antilles, are now on the maintenance list. And so these move from the active 3166 list to what they consider a maintenance list. And that does not mean that they go away completely. It means, in fact, I think, oh gosh, I shouldn't do this off the cuff, but .su has some sort of time to live on it, and it's like 100 years or 75 years or some such thing. So anyway... they move into a different category.
I'm sorry. So is that second list, is that also referenced in the RFC?
The RFC just references ISO's 3166. And so it's like, I don't know, let's say old cars or old televisions. Just because they're no longer made doesn't mean that they disappear.
Olivier, and then...
Welcome.
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Beau. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc for the transcript. Actually, the CCTLD space is one that has quite a few kinks inside it, which are all historical. Strictly speaking, yes, every CCTLD should be following an ISO 3166 country code or country and territory code as it was published. And of course, if that territory code disappears, then it should theoretically also disappear from the internet domain space, the CCTLD domain space, although I don't think that there is any specific rule regarding that. And because some of the CCTLD operators have a contract and some do not have a contract, some they're not bound legally. The ones that don't have a contract are not bound legally. In addition to that, there is one major kink, which has always been there, which is .UK, because .UK is actually not on the ISO 3166 list. It's .GB, and GB is Great Britain. The thing, though, is that Great Britain is only the mainland part, and it doesn't include Northern Ireland. So .UK, in addition to that, .UK actually was first UK .. It used the NRS system rather than doing the DNS system, which meant that UK addresses, and I remember using this back in the day, you did UK .. something else .. something else .. something else, which made it very difficult when you then sent email to the internet because you started with com .. name of the company or org .. name of the company, which made it even worse when somebody decided to, and I remember there was a computer in the Czech Republic, which was computer science dot xyz dot cs. So it was cs dot xyz dot cs. But then you could have CS, because many people called their computer science department, so it was cs dot name of the computer dot edu. And the machines that used to have to find out what was going on were getting really messed up, because was it edu.computer.xyz.cs or was it cs.xyz.edu? So it really shows you how, you know, a lot of the internet's growth and the way the DNS and putting all these networks together went totally crazy. There was also a network called CSNet. CS.net. I mean, imagine that one. That's really, that's an easy one. So in the early days, there were a lot of bounced emails, a lot of addresses that weren't working. Thankfully, with time, everyone went into the system where you put the domain name, the top-level domain at the end. But at some point, it wasn't that case. So I think it's very, you know, things are being ironed out slowly. But for .UK, in the early 90s, there was a push to move everything over to .GB. Now, understandably, due to political considerations in the UK, moving from .UK to .GB might have repercussions as to the status of Northern Ireland. Well, what do you do with computers in Northern Ireland if they have to move to .GB? They certainly do not want to be in .GB, but they are in .UK. It's just a can of worms. And because it involves sovereignty, it involves territory, it involves all sorts of things, I might even go as far as touching one specific subject which has come up in the Lacrallo discussions, where there is a territory that one country or set of countries calls one name and another one another name. And I'm speaking, of course, of Las Malvinas and the Falklands. That's one other can of worms. You want to go further? .ps. .ps is mentioned as occupied territories, or are they occupied or are they not occupied, because they're the territories which are actually not occupied since a certain time ago, but some people still think that they are occupied. And the boundaries, of course, still have not been correctly set. it's just stuff you don't want to touch, and everyone just keeps the status quo on this and says, you know what, we'll leave it like that for the time being. It's not hurting anyone in a major way. As long as we can get the email and the website and these things running, and as long as only a subset of the whole community, probably us geeks, are asking ourselves questions about this, I don't think the regular user out there is really bothered. They just want to be able to get the thing, their email at the other end. Now, agreed, there might be some cases where there is a user issue. And I realize that even through this discussion that we're having here, we're all confused about this as well. And we're actually in ALAC, in Naralo, in URALO, we're actually, I wouldn't say part of the system, but I would imagine that we know a heck of a lot more than people out there. So perhaps one takeaway that we can take from this discussion in Naralo, and I'm glad we're actually having it, is that we should investigate, and certainly I've heard others saying this, is that we should investigate, or perhaps even get Naralo to ask the ALAC to investigate ways of being able to provide easier to access information for the internet user out there, in case anybody is interested in trying to find out what is what. Certainly, the accessibility of the INR database might be something that could be helped. But then, of course, the moment you take on such a responsibility, you're going to have some work in having to update your own database. I know that because in the 90s, I actually maintained a database of country connectivity. And whilst in the early 90s, connectivity status for countries, and we're speaking about a whole country as a whole, did not involve much work, not much was happening. The moment you reached 1995, 96, 97, there were so many things happening around the world that I kept on having people emailing me and telling me, this is wrong, you're late. And unfortunately, yet again, because you deal with national pride, we are on the internet. If there had been any more than 1 or 2 weeks since a country had actually sent its first packet outside, I received threatening letters saying, why are you purporting that our country is not on the internet when for 2 weeks we've already been on it? Do your job. Not understanding I was doing this in my spare time while trying to do a PhD at the same time, but there you go. So that's the long story. I'm sorry if I took too much time, but it kind of gives you an idea of how things are not that black and white or clear in this space. Thank you. And maybe we could shed a bit of light on that. Thanks.
Well, I would like to applaud the ALAC chair for the spectacular display of oracular fireworks and arcane knowledge that has taken us to a new level at this meeting. I feel positively exhilarated now, and I don't wish to recognize anyone else to speak because it's 8:15, unless it's an emergency.
No.
Our special unexpected, yeah, one of our special unexpected guests, yes, please, go ahead.
I'm going to wear a mask next time. But anyway, I just wanted to clarify when I talked about the RFC and the criteria, because I thought someone said that they didn't think that governments had anything to do then with CCTLDs, and if I heard that, it's incorrect. So the requirements in RFC 1591 include what I said was, you know, a mandatory requirement that you had to be in country if you were the manager. It also has requirements about local community support and government support. So there's a whole lot of check boxes. We only focused on the one because that was my question. And I would say that, you know, it's a short RFC, and it's not too techie. So if you wanted to read it, you would see that, you know, there are some mandatory things, but included in that is whoever comes in to get a delegation or a redelegation has to show the support from local community and government and have everything in order. Yes, and if there's a, you know, so there are requirements that are broad because that is meant to support the community and of the country. So sorry to take some time.
No, thank you. And with that, I would like to close this meeting, which I think was very, very successful, especially for participation from back in the United States and back in Canada and back, well, I don't think we have anybody in Mexico, but we're delighted that we had a chance to coordinate this meeting here with a good time back home and have some remote participation. So thank you very much.
Just before you close the room, let me put the RFC link into the chat space for completion. There you go.